Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-host, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
And here we are. Welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. It is Thursday, July 21st. This is your co-host, Scott Fullerton, as always with our other co-hosts across the country over there to the far side of Boston, Massachusetts. Kevin Hogan, how are you?
Well, I am excited to hear how things are in Ohio. You guys have been grabbing the headlines as of late, so I'm glad we get this time to chat today. I'm sure there are plenty of headlines we're going to go over, but first, how are you? You had some travels as well.
I'm doing very well. Yes, we are doing a show today basically on current events because I had a travel day. I'm heading down to Columbus to work with my radio station. I work down there, of course. So we didn't have any guests booked, but Kevin, there's so much going on in the news. We couldn't go a week without doing the show, which is crazy out there.
No. So what's it like? Well, how are things there? What's it like there? Tell us.
It's actually been pretty good. I mean, I have a good friend that lives right in downtown Cleveland, and they said yesterday they got a little dicey for a bit. Overall, it's been very, very mellow there. Their police presence has been fantastic from what I hear. I've been watching the show every night on TV, and it's caused me a little amusement, so I'm happy there. but as far as the city itself goes, Cleveland is handling it very well. They had a couple of skirmishes. They had to arrest like 15 people, I think, yesterday. But that was it. Okay. It has actually been very smooth. I was thinking on sneaking down there yesterday. I had another show, and honestly, I just want to go down to see all my favorite news stars more than I wanted to see it.
That's what it looked like.
But I decided not to do it last second. How's your week been going?
Well, very, very busy. But first on that, I read a couple of things. This is just interesting. So, I mean, first of all, everything I still see just looks like it's kind of like a red, white, and blue hangover from the Cavaliers party. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's so funny because in the background you still see all these LeBron James. It's just so funny. Anyway, so I was watching some of the stuff, but I don't know if you heard about this because you said you've been tuning in. I guess they said if the Republican convention for its ratings were a show, I guess lately, the past nights, one or two nights, they said some studio execs would be, you know, either wringing their hands or driving off the lot, being escorted off the lot, because I guess the ratings have been tanking since Melania's speech. That went up. Melania's speech got ratings and, you know, whatever. And then after that, I guess the ratings have really, really been going down. So the one thing they said that that the Trumpster has been able to brag about all the time, other than, you know, votes, has been his ratings. And they said actually on TV lately, the ratings haven't been so good.
Yeah. Wow, I did not hear that yet. I've been watching – I watched the full coverage on either CNN or MSNBC, so I know there's an hour – I don't know if they're talking about – those two, if they're talking about the hour each night on prime time they're doing from 10 o'clock. But that's interesting. I like hearing that, though. I got to be honest.
Yeah, it was interesting. Here's the other thing. I won't go on and on about it because I know we have other very serious, important things to talk about. But I don't know if you saw what a street artist, did out in L.A. On the Hollywood Walk of Fame, because Trump has a star out there.
Right.
I mean, you know, everybody has a star out there nowadays, probably, I'm sure. And I'm sure everybody who has it is deserved of it. I'm serious of that, of course. But someone took and made a little tiny cement wall with barbed wire and saying "Don't Cross" spelled in both English and in Spanish, and built a little tiny wall around Donald Trump's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, you don't
got to
look at
it. It's going viral on Instagram and everywhere else. So I think that is just a brilliant little idea that someone's been doing, and everyone's photographing and sending it around the world.
Oh, my God. I love that so much. You don't even know. That's fantastic. Well, we got a lot to talk about. I want to definitely talk more about the convention tonight. We'll talk a little bit about – I mean, it seems like every week something happened. 2 weeks ago, of course, we were talking about what happened in Baton Rouge. And then last week we were talking about what happened in Minnesota. And this week we have, take your pick, we have Paris, we have Turkey, we have Baton Rouge again in the news. So
Nice.
A lot of stuff going on there.
Nice, of course, is terrible. But did you hear just before we went on the air here, just a couple of hours ago, the story in Miami? We can go on after if you need to introduce something else. But the story out of Miami is absolutely gut-wrenching as well. Charles Kinsey, the unarmed, he's an African-American therapist with an autistic patient that he was going to get, I guess, either had wandered away or something. And there's a gentleman, the patient, playing with a truck or whatever. I haven't seen the whole video, but the Charles Kinsey, he has his hands in the air saying, you know, don't shoot, don't shoot. And they still shot him. He has his hands in the air.
Yeah. It's amazing. I have not – I saw a very brief – because I was out all afternoon, actually. But I saw a very brief clip of it this morning. And, yeah, this guy is on his back, laying flat on his back with his shoulders up a bit so his hands can be up in the air and his head looking towards the officers, saying, don't shoot, don't shoot, telling about the kid. The guy has a toy train or something he's playing with. And
it's very sad. I'm glad he's alive. I'm glad he's alive. I'm glad that also, again, when social media is used responsibly and peacefully, we can correct these things. But wow, it's pretty shocking.
Right. Well, it's just like me and my friend were talking. Like I said, I was out all afternoon talking with one of my friends, and it's starting to become a cycle. We have the black population afraid of the police, and then for everything happening, then the police are getting afraid of the blacks. And so it's ramping the tension up more than it's mellowing things out the more it happens. So it's like it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy of being scared and actual just being incompetent on the part of some people.
Yeah, I mean a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is with even the personal coaching that I can't go into any individual cases or anything like that. But a lot of the bridges, the people that I'm meeting are some of the bravest people I have ever met in my life. And you know, that's law enforcement included, that's African American leaders included, that's interfaith leaders included. These are people that are going into conversations that are uncomfortable, because think about this again: if you're always getting your news or kind of reside in a way that your views aren't challenged because people kind of watch what they're comfortable with these days. It's kind of pre-digested news, as I say. So if you're never going into those uncomfortable conversations to have a dialogue, and these are people that do it every day, and I find myself doing it with people now oftentimes, if they have been stigmatized or are trying to challenge that and don't necessarily understand it, even know what to call it at first, it is so wearing. It is so damaging to one's identity, to one's neighborhood, to one's community, that oftentimes people don't know where to begin. And in that, it's almost a paralysis, and then things can get really bad. So I really am so honored that every day I get to work with more people, get to reach out, even the professionals group on the Healing Stigma website, that people please look up healingstigma.com and join the professionals group for resources. And, you know, the kind of posts that we have there are amazing. But it's that first step sometimes. People don't know what to do. Then sometimes media, again, not to blame any one part, but oftentimes they're bombarded by either headlines or negative blasts that are repeated throughout the day, sometimes very violent blasts these days, let's face it. And then you just feel disheartened. You feel like there isn't anything you can do. And there is, and that's why we're doing the show. That's why you and I can talk like this, because even through all of these things, we know we're busy for doing the right thing. Your trip to do the radio show in Columbus, the stuff that I'm doing with Healing Stigma, these are hopeful projects of, you know, with people that I get more and more energy from.
Right. And your work is so important. I mean, and stigma comes in a lot of different ways. There's different types of stigma. We talk a lot about the negative stigma of things happening to people, but there's also the stigma of all these people in Paris. You have people watching 84 people get taken out by a truck. The stigma they're going to have in their life just witnessing it, even though it hasn't happened to them personally, something has happened to them, right?
Oh, here's the thing. There is so much in terms of, grief is a whole nother story, and how it affects families, how it affects individuals, how different cultures deal with it. can be extremely stigmatizing. We look at now, you know, it is, you know, yes, an extreme case, but it's a human case that breaks my heart. You look at some of, you know, say the girls that have been kidnapped from Boko Haram and then come back to their communities, and they are absolutely in their own communities oftentimes stigmatized, sometimes having, you know, whatever gone through to stay alive. You would expect, you know, in certain ways, a warm, loving welcome. Now, we don't have to go that far to understand that even here in our own culture, back here in the States, if we're throwing stigma around from, you know, whatever, a, you know, microphone or whatever, and you're throwing it at a particular neighborhood or a person or whatever, that really can stick, and it has a lot of damage. And when people are looking to come back and find that support in their home, and it's not there, and we know it is, I mean, you know, I know it from, you know, the LGBT community as well. You know, a new report came out, homeless youth are, you know, it's so difficult for LGBT youth when they come out to their families. The statistics are gut-wrenching.
Right, right. Now, yeah, it's just, there's so many ways to deal with it, or so many types of stigma to deal with it. It's just really, that's why it's so important, the thing you do, there's got to be so many tricks in your arsenal. I just can't imagine everything that you have to learn to do with each individual cases. I mean, it's got to be almost daunting on your side, and sometimes.
It's a lot of listening. It's getting to know what the situation is before I try, I really try not to do any harm or take anything for granted. I learn as much as I share in the knowledge I have, and that's how I get better at what I do. I mean, the one thing I can tell everyone who's listening right now is, you know, the thing I always say, no one is born with stigma. Society assigns stigma, but it's been an ancient thing we've done, you know, not to teach you, but it goes all the way back to meaning a mark that was made, you know, back in, you know, classical Greek times on a person who was accused of theft or whatever on their head, so they could be seen as having a stigma, a mark on them, and
right,
being, you know, treated as an outsider. So, I mean, we do it with everything. Like I said, nowadays with social media, that mark, poof, it goes so quick. But because each case, if you listen and you don't try it, I mean, I never try to apply any kind of cookie cutter solution to this, but I get sharper at the people that energize me, let me, you know, help and try to help every day. But what happens, I do notice is that society can be kind of wily. So can social media. So that's why I have to keep up with it. And that's, you know, that's why I'm writing the book with Dr. Galitzer Levy. Because I think that's one of the other things, is to get that out and have people share that and discuss, you know, get that into more conversations, is going to have other people start to make these connections as well. But it's, yeah, I mean, think of how fast social media has changed. Think of what has happened in our lifetimes with technology, right? I mean,
right, sure.
Since we were kids, we, you know, now imagine that all of that has a way of affecting how quickly, how much, and how indelible stigma is. All of that has an effect. So that's
right,
how it is.
Right.
You literally, when you realize society's been assigning it, however, there have been cases, mine I'm proud to say as I'm learning through going through this, where people have survived it, and mine has the double cross where, you know, after being locked out of a classroom, this is now the most important lesson I have. So writing the program is part of it, but seeing in how society, I had the honor of also studying anthropology for many years. So seeing how culture is something, I love the quote, no one person can own it, but we can all share it. But it's so powerful. We're more than any other animal, more than any other creature, humans are shaped by culture. More than any other
right.
organism on the earth, we are shaped by culture.
And there's just so much to empathize with now. Like we said, we had, since we've been on the air, last Thursday we had Nice, and that was just so traumatic in itself. And then you have this coup over in Turkey, which really, it's a Democrat-elected government, but the guy's not too nice, and there's going to be a lot of repercussions, I think, on the people of Turkey as this happens. I can't even imagine if you're an immigrant here from there, or think just the survivors of what's going to be happening over there. And
well, you know, I've traveled to both Greece and to Turkey, and I love both countries. I really do. It's still one of the most tense border crossings, and just because of the politics or whatever, if you're there as a tourist. But I've been to a lot of these areas and love them, absolutely, really, really enjoy those areas. But I think one of the things that's so, so important, and people – How should I say this? People kind of get it, but there is so much in that area. Turkey is so important to not just its geography to Syria, but in terms of as a democracy, as the size that it is, as its location to both Russia and Europe, and naturally as part of as what it's doing in terms of its negotiations with Europe, and this on the other side, you've got England chopping off with a Brexit. It is a it is an extremely important time to take a look at this, for the whole world to take a look at it, and see I mean the people here. There's one thing I'll say this. Here's another one for social media. I don't know how to judge it, but I saw an article. I think it was in the BBC how a mobile phone beat a tank, and it was about how the president took to some kind of, I don't know exactly what it was, whether I think it was Facebook, and, the military took to tanks and intersections. And guess what? When they took to social media and everyone, had a phone and they were, encouraged to go out in the street and march for democracy, that's what happened. Phones
right. Yeah,
beat tanks in that situation.
He actually was on FaceTime. He was on wherever he was on vacation, FaceTimed into a news studio in Turkey.
He was in Marmaris. I've been there. I've been to the town where he was in. It's a beautiful, beautiful port. It's one of the most beautiful ports you'll ever see, Marmaris in Turkey. It's absolutely gorgeous. I've been there, where he traveled from. Yeah, it's absolutely
right.
Spectacular. Yeah.
And just amazing that he's able to gather that kind of support. So it's great. He was democratically elected. Obviously, he has a lot of people's support.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out
since
the oppressors.
Academics have been told to get home as soon as possible. Turkish academics that are on, study or whatever, they have been told, from what I've read, to conclude whatever they're doing and get back as soon as possible. And meanwhile, I think maybe double the amount of police and military, double the amount of, I think, educators have been rounded up as well. And, of course, the whole thing gets even a bit more surreal in the sense that they're blaming a cleric, I believe, or someone who is in exile in the mountains of Pennsylvania that they're asking to be extradited. I'm not laughing. I'm not making this up. This is true. And Turkey is a proud, beautiful, wonderful country with an incredibly rich history. And I would encourage people to, go more than just Wikipedia, Google, or the first 5 minutes, because I've been there. And for instance, when I was walking along the streets in Marmaris, I'll never forget it, and I had like a water bottle I wanted to throw away, and there was just no garbage cans, and I walked by, and this gentleman came up from one of the hotels that I walked by. I wasn't staying there, but he saw me walking by. He said, "Here, let me take that." I said, "God, you guys are wonderful. Where are your garbage cans?" He says, "No, you won't find them." And that's all he would say. But then I realized that a short while earlier there had been a there was a bombing in a garbage can, and it was a young British girl or something had been either killed or harmed. I can't know which. But what they did is they just literally went out and removed all of the garbage cans and made sure that everyone knew how to, help and take care of that situation overnight. They tried to change. They tried to adapt and make people safe there.
Right.
Now,
too silly for mere words. And then, of course, we go back to Baton Rouge and we have this guy that is targeting policemen yet again after we have Dallas. And it's just heartbreaking. It's like you don't know when it's going to get in that vicious circle that I talked about earlier.
Yeah, but wait. Here's one thing I just want to remind people on this, if I can, with listeners, because that the first thing that really gets me going on that is my heart goes out to all of the African-American activists, all of the fantastic folks behind things like, I believe in things like Black Lives Matter. I've always said this. It doesn't take away from all lives and other lives. It's not saying in place of it's showing that there's a real need here to address this. And by addressing that need, it doesn't take away from other needs. We know that, like I said, realizing it as a bisexual leader, it doesn't take away from gay, lesbian, or transgender when we all get together and talk about all of the different things that affect us. But the thing that I would remind people is, look, there were people talking about peace in Belfast while, still on either side from both Protestant paramilitary organizations and, the Catholic side, the IRA and splinter groups. There were peace negotiations going on while they were still fighting. Even during truces, things would break down. And that didn't mean that side represented the whole – and so, of course, that's the thing that people have to understand this. There is so much brave work going on. And, yes, our country – is bombarded with violence in almost so much ways, in entertainment, news, and all the rest. We have a incredibly surreal. Try to explain our gun laws to people outside the United States when I lived in Europe, and it's really, I mean, and then you come back here and you see what's going on after, you know, recently when Democrats try to, you know, do the changes they did and they're slapped down. And then on top of it, we have, you know, the kind of crime and the kind of difficulty with a very extreme distribution of wealth in this country, and then the things that go on in the, especially in inner cities, and, you know, you look at it all, and I saw, I forget who it was. It was on the, I don't, did you see the town meeting that they had with David Murr and the president, President Obama?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I wasn't able to see the entire thing, but I did see part of it. Right.
There was a police. I was very moved. I thought the people who spoke, I thought it was, you know, good on everyone to have a conversation as opposed to screaming matches and to go a little bit beyond just a, you know, a quick news bite, let's say. But there was one police chief, and I can't remember where he was from, and he said, look, he goes, we oftentimes are the people who care the most about black lives. And you could see it really kind of set some people off in the room. He said, because we still go in to neighborhoods sometimes where no one else does, but we're only, you know, oftentimes allowed to do one thing, incarcerate, you know, or not. And we need that kind of support for all of the other things to come in and help make a change in the community that we care about. We wouldn't be going in there. And I know when he says we, there's people who say, listen, that doesn't represent, you know, there's bad cops and good and all that. But how interesting to me, I'm like, how interesting. You've got these two groups. And again, I go back to Dallas and thinking of activists and police in a moment actually working together to help each other and to survive. And I know that people say, well, that's, you know, there's lots of other sides to it. But the thing that's amazing here is the more those two groups build bridges, and I'm talking right now, if this is a fissure in our country, if this is a problem, if all other groups, all other minority groups, all other groups that have faced stigma and discrimination join together and look to how to build bridges, even between, you know, helping the police, recognizing the job they do, making them feel safe and supported in their job, and at the same time making sure that the African American, the concern for lives, the concern for safety, the concern for equality in so many ways, that is heard and not diluted by trying to change what it is. If those bridges are built, imagine how many other bridges we can build. However, if we keep making those divides through things like politics, if we just keep hacking away at a scar that's already there, we're going to start losing the limbs of this country. It's going to be terrible, my feeling.
Right. No, I agree 100%. And it's like we talked about, I think, before, it's so sad that we live in a society where young white people are told how to respect police and young black people are told how they have to fear police. And we need to be able to bridge that divide to get to a common conversation, I think, before any true healing can really happen in that area, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely well said. Well said. Really.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break here. We've talked about some of the horrors in the world. Let's go ahead and take a break, relax a bit, catch our breath. And when we come back, let's talk a little bit of politics. Lots of stuff going on in the convention that really has a lot of little finger offshoots in different ways. We had our Ben Carson talking about trans issues on there, and you have a great story on that. So we're going to kind of go back to the RNC and then kind of do little finger subjects on there. We appreciate you guys listening to a special episode of Healing Stigma Left to Straight Radio. We are not any guests today. We're talking about current events. If you have anything that you want to talk about and you're listening in, you want to give us a call. The phone number is 347-989-0126. We'll see if we can get to your calls or not, but we're going to take a quick break. Little mellow today. We're going to play a little of our Damien Escobar, that fantastic violinist we have. Do a little bit of Fire to the Rain. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio. Kevin and I will be back in just a moment. And we are back. That was the amazing Damian Escobar with Fire to the Rain. Such a talented violinist, I've got to tell you. Well, we are back. We're talking now. We're going to talk a little bit about the Republican convention. Of course, it's been going on since Monday. Donald Trump is the official nominee as of Tuesday night. He was officially, but it hasn't been without a little bit of controversy. Have you been watching a little bit of it each night, Kevin, or what's your take on it?
You can't help but get, you know, kind of exposed, I would say.
As a writer,
I can't say that I wasn't absolutely smitten with the whole entire speech controversy. You know, every time plagiarism comes up, I'm always fascinated by how it plays up. You know, up and up and up on one side, whatever. You know, and of course, regardless of how it goes, my jaw dropped because you can take those little sound bites out and it becomes so damaging.
Right. And I do feel sorry for Melania because she's the one that's speaking of stigmatization. I mean, this girl is thinking she's giving the speech of her life and counting on other people. And all of a sudden the next day she's like the laughing stock. So that's a lot of stigma in and of itself.
Even
right
worse.
There. I kind of
even worse. Can I just say something even worse? There was a quote that was out there and I am badly mashing this up, but people can check me. At one point they had discussed it with the, there were two things. At one point, I felt really bad for her, and maybe I'm still just being a screenwriter trying to write the conversation without hearing it. But afterwards, they showed, I think, when they got back, it looked like, and this is what the news was saying, maybe they wanted it, but it looked like the Donald was absolutely, you know, just ripped. And he walked off, and then she kind of walks in alone with her cell phone. And I just really felt bad for her. I was like, I don't like the guy. Let's comes out. I'm not getting into politics, but I don't necessarily like, but stand by her if she just went through this, no matter what. I would say stand by her. You know, hold her arm.
Right.
Be proud of her because she just did everything for you, you know, in a way that is quite, you know, yeah, that's nerve-wracking. But anyway, they said the next day something about that they had gotten together with other speechwriters there in the room and decided to represent fragments of her thoughts in the speech. I mean, the way they said it was so...
It was crazy.
I was looking at it, I'm going, I don't really know who's trying to do the backpedaling here, but it's almost like you're backpedaling yourself into knives. You're only making it worse, you know. So however they handled it, it was it made me scratch my head, which I realize that's also the other thing. That really had nothing to do with the politics. You know, I was more fascinated by how Ted Cruz was using English to not endorse Trump. That was absolutely fascinating. What did you think of that?
Talk about that. That was the most unspecific unendorsement I've ever heard, I think. Both for your hearts,
like,
up
wow.
and down together. But he left it kind of there. And then him and his wife had to be escorted out to boo.
Yeah, had to be escorted off the floor. Yeah. Yeah, it looked like the guys from Duck Dynasty were probably going to like come around and start, you know. I mean, the other night there when he had all the reality television stars or something up there.
Right.
Somebody told me that was it Chachi, the guy who played Chachi or something was up there.
They had Chachi on stage, Scott Baio.
I didn't see that.
Their star-studded night. They're three celebrities.
That was their star-studded night.
Yeah, they're three celebrities. They had everyone else is either part of the Republican group or they are part of Donald's family. Both have quite a few high numbers of people. But the first night was their quote-unquote celebrities where they had the Duck Dynasty guy, they had Chachi, Scott Baio, and they had – oh, did you hear – the third was Antonio Sabato Jr. Did you hear his whole thing?
No. What did he do?
This is Antonio Sabato Jr., soap star, a great-looking guy, probably a pinup guy for the LGBT community.
Yeah,
but he comes out there and he brings the entire – he's calling Obama a Muslim. He's not a Christian. Obviously, he's not a Muslim. We're not going through the old stuff that Trump did.
Which is a religion, by the way, for people. It's not a stigma. You know, it's a religion. It's not a stigma. You know, even – go ahead. Keep going.
That's it. It was just crazy. It's just that was his celebrities for the night. It was just amazing.
I guess the things have been tanking. The ratings have been tanking after the first night. So it might be, you know, that's another sign of. Of course, here's the thing, though. He can still grab the sound bites on, you know, the news, and whether or not his, you know, I don't know. It does his big demographic really watch the whole entire Republican convention? Because I think about what Republican conventions were, and what you're describing to me is not like Republican conventions from when I was younger.
It's not. It's really not. And that's what they're saying. They're saying his people are already so made up their mind that nothing's going to change their mind to begin with.
Right.
So it's just kind of a comedy of errors for everyone else. Did you hear about that Third Eye Blind, that band?
No. No.
Oh, my
Tell
God.
Me.
Third Eye Blind, it's a really good band. They've had quite a few hit songs, but they're kind of in their waning years now and doing the college tours and things like that, right?
Okay.
So they accepted to come on for the national convention and play. So they come on the stage. They only play one of their hit songs, right? They only play one hit song. And then they start spouting out things like, you guys do know that science is real, right? And gay acceptance if something should happen. And they start fucking the audience of the Republican National Convention. And they're getting paid for it.
And they're getting paid for it. Oh, my God.
And totally debunks it. I mean, how embarrassing is that to not know that the band you booked, I mean, it comes right up there with the Trump thing. You know that this guy's coming out and you're
– The best thing I would tell our viewers, it's very quick, and I don't know if you've seen this, but the best thing I saw is, did you see the outfit and then what Stephen Colbert did when he snuck up onto the podium?
No, I missed that. What happened?
Okay, I don't have this right now, like the www.whatever, but obviously Stephen Colbert snuck up onto the podium in this outrageous outfit that's got to be from, and I got to admit this, I know I have to go and watch it now, but it's got to be from The Hunger Games, and he's some kind of evil leader. He's holding a cat. He said he's here at the Republican National Convention, otherwise known as the Power Hungry Games. And he goes, I know I'm not supposed to be up here, but neither is Donald Trump. He scored him off the stage.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the thing that gets me is Stephen Colbert is still yanking the chain of the right in this country, and he's been doing it for so long.
Exactly. Now he's doing it on network television. He's got network television getting them.
You got to see the outfit. It's just amazing. The man is just a genius. So,
I know exactly
who
he's talking about. I'm a Hunger Games guy. I know exactly who he's looking like. But did you see his sketch the next night after Melania?
No, I'll have to see this.
Oh, you have to.
It's been a long. It's been a. I need happiness. Go ahead.
He had Laura Benante, which is like one of my favorite Broadway people of all time. She's been in so many great things. She's played on Supergirl on TV. She's played on Nashville on TV. Fantastic singer, fantastic actress, beautiful. So he calls her up. He says, I don't let it be known, but I'm actually friends with the Trump. And Melania is here to rebut her statement. And she has a speech to say by the same speechwriters the night before. And she goes on and you can imagine it. It was like seven different plagiarized things going. One thing was a Kit Kat bar. It was like, she was like, give me a break. No, give me a break. Give me a Kit Kat bar. And just the way she said her delivery, she's such a great actress. It was amazing. You have to Google that and see that. Because it was the funniest skit I've seen Stephen do forever.
That's good.
But then
that's
there's
good.
Some serious stuff, though. We have Ben Carson come on, Dr. Ben Carson, mind you, talking about how there's no such thing as a transgender person. How can that happen? If you read a book about Afghanistan, does that mean you're Afghanistan? If you read a book about other sexuality, does that make you? That was amazing to me. And there's so much good stuff going on in the trans world now. You brought that story to my attention of the documentary. Talk about, did you happen to hear any of that or see any of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, I've really been trying to concentrate on the positive this week, but I did have to, you know, when that came across, it's just the trans community goes through so much. They really do, you know, and we look at you can keep going about in so many different ways from, you know, trans people of color and the murder rates. It's staggering. It really is. So the last thing we need is anyone doubting whether this is real. No one would, as far as I know, forge this experience, fake this experience, if it wasn't something so real that it was felt to the very core of one's identity. And gender, And we're realizing, again, through gender fluidity, through, you know, a whole bunch of different, you know, the idea of a generation thinking about being gender queer is absolutely something that is, you know, how should we say, is so comfortable for them that they wonder why others don't get it. But they don't. Right. And especially when you look at leaders, especially when you look at people of authority, that's why I brought it to your attention was this documentary about Zoe Luna. The title is Raising Zoe. I know we can talk about it in a second, but you know, it takes this kind of courage sometimes to just get the headlines. Because normally, and again, if you look at it, words like, and this happens again in the news, words like bisexual, words like trans or transgender are oftentimes used as a way still of grabbing headlines in a salacious way in the news. And therefore, and we know this, people, do they read the whole thing sometimes or do they just glance at the headline and then make up their mind?
Right.
And so still, when you look at, you know, the, how should we say this, not every single person who has... and obviously, this is, you know, it's a huge statistic, of course not, but so many people with mental illness that get treatment and live wonderful, productive lives are never, ever going to be violent in their entire life. But yet, if you look at the news, it sounds like at times every single person who has done anything violent is off their meds and suffering from mental illness. And by the time you get done, you're so fearful by the end of it. It's like a stigma on any time you hear mental illness, you feel like the person's going to be a mass murderer and going to go off. And it's so
right.
wrong. And so, you know, the same thing when you have this, first of all, the number one way to take away a person's experience is to deny they exist. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think the bisexual community, at least those bisexual leaders that I'm so proud to, you know, be friends and know, they're so sensitive to their trans brothers and sisters who also may be bisexual or not, but they're sensitive to the trans movement because that community, when people tell them they don't exist, we get that. We get that all the time. You don't exist. You haven't made up your mind. You're just, you know, you're just on the way to being gay. And so when that,
right.
when that's said to someone who your whole experience is told you don't exist, I kind of get that when it's also something that you're going through, you know, through, be it through education or whatever else, and people are denying you that safety, and then it comes down to something, as we've talked so much about, just what restroom you are comfortable with using, and you're told that you have to go somewhere where you feel you don't belong, it becomes a nightmare. So
right,
what people
exactly.
go through is so real, is so gut-wrenching. In my mind, how dare he use any moment to say someone who is so brave, that is a really brave thing. And think about anybody just going through puberty. Think about just what normally you go through getting comfortable in your own body. Can you imagine doing that in a body that is, you know, for you feels like it's not the gender that you belong in? And now imagine what that's like. So how dare he, in my mind, use any kind of that, you know, doctor as a knowledgeable person not to take a look at the situation and realize these are some very brave people that should be the litmus test of how well this country protects its citizens, allows them the freedoms to be, what is it, the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. If my trans brothers and sisters, if my black brothers and sisters can't be safe and enjoy themselves, then I can't be either, because those words don't apply to everyone.
That's so true, and it just
yeah.
it's so frustrating because they're – I love how people try to tell other people what their experience is, right? That's one of the things we
yeah.
all, anyone
yeah.
that's any type of minority, be it black, white, gray, LGBT, whatever it happens to be.
Oh, look at Leslie Jones.
Define your experience.
Sorry to interrupt. Look at Leslie Jones. Look at what happened to her. The actress, did you see, because you know entertainment, the
of
actress
course.
In Ghostbusters, did you see what happened to her on Twitter?
I did, and thank goodness that guy's been banned for life. Milo,
yeah.
whatever his last name is. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, she had – I mean, she's quit – I mean, my heart goes out to her. And this is an actress. She's an actress. She took a part in a movie. And a kind of, you know, racist, misogynist – it's just horrible. And, yes, good for Twitter starting to make a change here. But, again, this comes down to the other side of it, and it's looking at it, is how quickly social media cuts one way or the other.
No, that's exactly right.
And that's what we're talking about. Yeah.
It's really nice to see Twitter kind of – this is their first step. Twitter has been asked to address these issues because so much bullying happens, of course, on social media. Twitter being a quick way with 140 characters, Facebook being a little longer form. But it's been tried to be addressed by quite a few people for a long time. This is the first time that I know that they've kicked someone out for what they've said that
yeah.
was so public.
Yeah.
But and the sad
right.
part of it is Leslie just like 3 days before was on The View talking to Whoopi Goldberg about how much seeing her for the very first time gave her hope of being a black actress on screen, or black, someone that she can be
yeah.
a comedian, she can be funny and do what she does. And she was hoping this movie would help encourage another
yeah.
generation of black actresses. And to have all that put on you, that's just, it's just horrible.
Yeah.
Just horrible.
Yeah, it's really tough. That's really tough. But here's the other thing to it, though, and this is the thing that's – I mean, the word is out there, and now there is – this is another thing, and this is one of those Fisher points that we need to look at and have discussions about. And I am so, this doesn't help Leslie Jones in the immediate, but she's so brave. She brought it out, and she behaved in such a fine way, and I'm so sad for her. But this is one of those places where can we have a country – with freedom of speech, which doesn't allow hate speech? Can we have a country that allows people to responsibly arm themselves and protect themselves without having assault rifles sold to people without background checks in such a way that is, you know, I don't know what those loopholes are, you know, like gun shows and all the rest.
Right.
So it's one of these Fisher points, you know what I'm saying? And yep. I am so, that's why we have to do this work, and it is ongoing. And if Twitter's just done the very first suspension of this, well, then of course there's going to be probably countersuits over freedom of speech. It's going to go further than that. And that's why I try to follow these things, because language, as we said before, can harm, but it's a question I put out there to people. Can we have freedom of speech without hate speech? And I don't think that's something that we can't aim at. It might sound too perfect to be true, but take a look at what our founding fathers wrote, as all men are created equal. And they didn't necessarily think of all the men and women and transgender brothers and sisters and everyone else that is going to come to this country and look for that same freedom and protection.
Right.
But it's still there,
and we have taken,
you know,
baby steps in the past. We talked about you can't yell fire in a crowded area. There are small baby steps that have been taken,
yep.
and maybe it is time to revisit that once again. And realize that's why they built this constitutional living, breathing thing. A lot of strict constitutionalists don't believe that, but I wholeheartedly believe it is something that is a living, breathing document that needs to be evaluated
yeah.
over time.
Hear, hear. Well, this is another reason. This is a great bridge. Can I jump to the Raising Zoe documentary?
Sure. Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing.
Okay. So for our listeners, we might jump around here today, but you'll get it here. We're gonna let you know how to get all this stuff after the show or whatever. But Raising Zoe is a documentary by Dante, and I want to say it right, Alan Costra, and Zoe Luna is a young, brave trans girl who I'm not sure where it was in California. I got to be honest, I'm not exactly sure.
It was in Northern California.
I think it was in Northern California. And if you check it out, I believe there's a wonderful article on this in The Advocate today. And if you check it out and Google, you know, do your Google, whatever, there's a wonderful preview as well. But the reason why I think it's a great bridge to talk about this now is Zoe Luna, from a very young age, with the support of her family, and again, that's one of those wonderful things, when there's the support of family members, and this is especially, it sounded like, from her sister and from her mother, she had a feeling of being very feminine, and it felt very comfortable for her. And yet, as she was going to school and going through the rest of experiences that us, you know, that we go through, you were just talking about it. You know, where does bullying happen? You know, we think about middle school, right? Well, can you imagine going through an experience of being born not the gender that you feel comfortable in, and now you're trying to express yourself in the gender that you feel comfortable in, and you have the support of your family? Well, guess what? When bullying instances happened and Zoe's mother went to school, I can't believe this, but the school turned around and said, for the protection of Zoe, we think it would be good if you took her out of the school and transferred her to another school district.
Just amazing.
And hats off to her. Zoe's mother said, the next time you see me, I won't be alone. And they said, excuse me? She said, I don't know who I need here with me, but I won't be alone, and I am not taking my daughter out of the school. And again, this is very important, to refer to a person who is trans by the correct gender or by the correct pronoun. We had that with our past guest who refers to themselves in the plural.
Right,
Jeffrey Marsh,
of course.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that takes thought, but it's important because it brings up this issue of gender fluidity. Anyway, so the mother Zoe's mother, hats off to her. I haven't seen the whole story. This is just from what I've read in some of the previews. But she went and got, guess who? Guess who she brings back as, you know, coming with her back to the school?
Oh, I know. It's amazing.
Right? Do you know who she brought back with her? Do you know? The American Civil Liberties Union. She brought back a lawyer from the American Civil Liberties Union, and they went back and they instructed the school onto what this young trans girl's rights were and what they did not have the right to do. Now, of course, she's a hero. They're making this this documentary is made, but this is, again, one of those fine points where I bring this up. My ears, you know, perk right up because as Healing Stigma, this is where Healing Stigma begins. Because just because she has the right to stay there, we remember that in the beginning there was a mother concerned about her trans girl, her daughter, going to school and having a safe place. So just because now the suit has happened, just because that has gone public and the documentary has been made, that doesn't necessarily mean she will have that protection day in and day out. And that kind of work, be it with educators, first responders, whatever, that's the kind of work I also do.
Right. And they've been doing this for 2 years now. Zoe and her mom, Ophelia is her mom's name. They've been doing they won the case in 2014. So this isn't new, but it's now the documentary's coming out. She's been the co-grand marshal of LA Pride last year. She's been on Vern Cox's MTV show, The T Word. I mean, this is someone that Jazz Jennings, people like that are true heroes. And I'm just so
excited. We should get her on the show. We should get her and her mom on the show. I would love to, or get the documentary. I would love to have them on the show. But you know, and again, I'm not working with that community. I want to say that right there. I'm not working with that particular community. But that's where this attention, that brave family, that brave young girl, that and also the artist who made the documentary. When you get that word out there, that's such powerful activism. That's building the bridges. That's doing the education. Like we said, where we have these different fissures of people that feel, you know, let's face it, her own school system gave her bad advice. They were trying to just sweep this problem away because they didn't know how to deal with it. And it's not a problem. It's absolutely dealing with people respectfully is what has to be done. And understanding, you know, what this experience is, not being like Dr. Carson, right? So this can be done. It, you know, laws can be made, but then to enact them with understanding and compassion, that's the next step. And we can do that. But those people that do it, like, you know, like Zoe, they build the bridges that allow programs like Healing Stigma to go and cross, and then pretty soon you've got communities, you've got organizations crossing those bridges, and guess what? With inclusion, we become a stronger, more productive, more resilient country. It's true.
Right. That's so true. So true.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I can't wait to see the whole documentary.
I'm trying to get her on because I can't wait to see that documentary, and it's so great to have, like I said, her, Jazz Jennings. I had the opportunity, actually, yesterday was supposed to be a pre-thing before Caitlyn Jenner was here. One of the groups here in Cleveland were having it. I was invited. I didn't want to go because, honestly, she's not one of my favorite people. As far as I respect her journey immensely, I respect the cause she's forwarded by coming out. But it's just I respect the people around her more because they're helping her with her journey. Once she gets a little farther in her journey, I'm hoping to be on board. But she was here to talk, and she's bringing up how it's hard to be Republican that is trans. And, well, yeah, if you have someone, this is the most anti-LGBT platform in the entire history of the party.
Yeah.
The most, I mean, they have not – do they have marriage between one man and one woman? That's not even the law of the land. It's not even legal. They have gay conversion therapy as a true alternate therapy. They have so many other things. And there's also, I just saw this last night and I wish I would have, darn it, I should have got that set up. I'm going to have to put it online for us. But there was a young lady, I'm saying mid-30s, lower 30s or something probably, that was part of the rules committee for the RNC convention. And the RNC convention is putting their rules together, which is part of the platform committee actually. They're putting their platform together and they're doing these anti-LGBT after anti, and she stands up and she speaks on it so eloquently as an out Republican part of the platform committee and was so eloquent with them. The bravery that had to take for her to speak out in front of all those people to begin with. But it's another video that you just have to see, and I'm going to try to find a way.
Again,
to
that's tough. I mean, it's one thing to address your supporters. You know, it's one thing to take that kind of courage and do that kind of a, you know, deliver that kind of a speech. So, yeah, I will. I'll check that out. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It really was amazing. And then we had just the log. Dan Savage is. I love watching Dan Savage reading his column. If you don't know who he is, he's a very out, very opinionated LGBT advocate. Does the Savage Love podcast, and he kind of took to terms a couple of groups this week that I thought was great. One, he took on the Log Cabin Republicans because what are you? You've been around for 40 years now, and 40 years later, we have the most offensive LGBT platform ever. What are you doing, A? And then he kind of took on third-party candidates, specifically the Green Party, which I thought was very interesting. Because when you think about it, and what he said really hit a chord with me, he said, we have these third-party candidates that say a lot of great things, and they probably could be very good for the country, but they never win. And his problem with it was, which I agree with, is this young lady we have that's running right now, and I forget her name, from the for the Green Party, she has never held in another elective office, and she's starting out running for the president of the United States. Where are these parties that are doing grassroots? Why aren't they running for school board, for city council?
She's like the Republican nominee. She's like the Republican nominee.
Exactly. It's like, start with the grassroots. If you want to start a movement, Green Movement has some great things. Libertarian has some great things.
Yeah.
But if you're truly going to start a movement, you just start it at the local ground and not every 4 years try to throw a monkey wrench at everything by running for president. But those were two interesting stories I saw from Dan that I just thought were kind of fun.
Well, I have an interesting news update to tack on to what we were just talking about. This just came across the news desk, literally, while we're speaking. The National Parent Teachers Association just adopted a resolution on recognizing LGBTQ individuals as a protected class.
Really? The National?
Yep.
That is amazing.
PTA. Yep.
Well,
for child advocacy.
Along those...
I just saw this. So I just saw the headline. I haven't read the whole thing, but literally, like we're saying, you know, these are the, you know, people are making changes. Someone like Zoe made a change in her school with the support of her family. That's not easy. People may say, oh, look now, she's been on this, she's been on that, and it's been 2 years. But in the beginning, it wasn't. There was people trying to force that poor, you know, rich in character, but poor in lack of support in the beginning, that poor student out of what is as much her school as anyone else's. And those kind of heroes, when they do that, when someone stands up at the RNC and says, look, I'm a Republican, I'm out, lesbian, you know, bisexual, gay, you know, transgender, whatever it is, and says, look, these are my opinions, and I'm part of this party, and this party has to make room for me as well. Those are heroes. You know, better those conversations
get the
best, too.
I was so proud of my
too.
Home state. California, my home state this week, I was so proud of. They are the first state that have mandatorily put it in their stature that they have to start teaching LGBT history. And so they put the first curriculum together this past week, and they're going to start teaching different parts of the LGBT community. They're going to talk about Harvey Milk. They're going to talk about Stonewall. They're not going to shove – everyone's afraid they're going to shove the gay down everyone's throats, which is not happening. But there is history involved. Just like they made the really – oh, what's that guy? Someone made a real ignorant comment on the news the other day, one of the Republicans, about how all of the great achievements in this nation has been by white people. And immediately, and this was on MSNBC, this guy, this is a mainstream guy. It's like, immediately, of course, we know of all the things that black Americans have done throughout. We have some Booker T. Washington, we have so many great black American heroes as well. It's like, you really have to have how much of that is put in history. And
did anybody see how many flowers went on the hearse of Muhammad Ali? Did anybody see that? Did you see the outpouring of love for that man? Did anybody see a person who, you know, I mean, think of when he converted to Islam and what it meant to him. You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? A person who absolutely used the English language as well in a way that still makes me smile. To him and his family, absolutely, I still love the way that wonderful athlete also was a presence and a power for people during some really difficult times in this country. You know, I may have been young, but I remember what went on here during Vietnam and all the rest. And wow, when you have people like that in this country, and then someone says all the great things were done by white people, take a look at that. What was that one? Don't get me started, but you know, it probably wasn't Paul Ryan's fault, but did you see the one about the selfie he took with all the White House interns?
Oh my goodness, how funny was that? I sure did.
Look at that and not see the, you know, another opportunity missed for the kind of inclusion, the kind of diversity that makes any organization, especially something like, you know, serving at the, you know, at the White House, that really is something that we want to work on.
And then they showed the Democratic
caucus
today. They showed the Democratic caucus today, and the difference is stark. What we're talking about is they have all these interns that work on the Hill and the White House and in different places for them. And Paul Ryan took his picture with all their public, and there's probably 120 or so, not anyone besides a beautiful blonde white person in the entire group, primarily.
Really?
And then the Democrats show theirs today, and it's such a diverse ethnic group. And when they just said last night, the percentage for Republican black delegates this year is 0.7%. There are 18 black delegates out of all 2,000 plus delegates at the Republican convention this year. It's the lowest number since 2020 something or other. It's just amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, these things are getting picked up internationally as well, because I just tell so many people, honestly, I forget when I don't explain myself. I think I'm so excited to talk to you, Scott. I forget that we're doing a show. So thank you for reminding our listeners what was going on with it was called the whitest selfie of all time on the BBC. So do you get it? This is getting headlines in international news. And
right.
It's already been out there that they're saying, can Donald Trump win with an old kind of angry white vote, to make it sound, you know, terrible, to call it, you know, an ugliness. But those headlines are going around. And, you know, again, to look at that and still see the party, I'm not going to talk about a candidate, but to talk, or the nominee, let's say, but to look at the party and say, look, you really should learn from this. Because to tell you the truth, a good Republican Party makes the Democratic Party better. And both of those parties healthy will make a third party better. And through that dialogue, we will get better. It's not going to be solved by 15, 30-second sound bites that are getting dumber, dumber, and dumber, and eventually kind of look like something from, I don't know, maybe, I mean, I've learned more from maybe a South Park episode than I have from some of the news on some of the things that they railed at each other running up to the Republican nomination, you know? So it's like, no, we can do better than that, and I think so can the Republican Party, and I don't mean that meme.
No, exactly, and I'm hoping to see a more a bigger convention about ideas next week with the Democrats. I'll be very disappointed if it becomes more about what's wrong with the country than what's right with the country, and we think we've seen that over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So, and Democrats can be just as guilty as anyone else, so I'm hoping next week we see the brighter side. We'll see what happens.
I just want to see Larry David take the stage as Bernie Sanders at some point. Because I really have a tough time. I've been watching all these different things, but I really had a tough time any time that he was doing Bernie Sanders, not watching the whole thing, even if I was walking through a room. He fascinated me how well he did it.
Oh, it was amazing. I loved it. So much fun.
Yes,
well, my friend,
yes.
I can't believe we've already talked for an hour. Why don't we go ahead and give our listeners a little break. Play one
Sounds
more
good.
Damian Escobar song, a little bit of Freedom, which I think is very appropriate for our political season
Excellent
we're
choice,
in now. And
always.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll kind of wrap this show up. Thanks so much for listening. You're listening to Healing Stigma on Left to Straight Radio with Kevin and Scott. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Here is Damian Escobar with Freedom. And we are back. That was the amazing Damian Escobar with Freedom. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. I had a good time. Kevin, you enjoy the show today?
I'm still got goosebumps from that violin playing, but I had a great time today. It's so much stuff going on that I feel like we didn't squeeze a guest out. I felt like we made room for current events. And every now and then when we do that, my friend, like I said, I apologize if I went too fast and any of that stuff to our listeners because I missed speaking to Scott throughout the week. But thank you so much for listening and letting us share the views on these times right now because they really are important. They really are and interesting.
Exactly. We appreciate y'all tuning in. We do like to have great guests for you. We will have great guests for you every week that we can. But on occasion, it's kind of fun just for Kevin and I to chat and talk about things because Kevin has such great insight to current events. So I really like talking about that. If you've missed any of our shows, please be sure you're downloading the app. We have apps available on both your iPhones and your Androids. Go to your iPhone app or go to your Google Play app and look for Left of Straight Radio. LEFTOFSTR and the number 8 radio. You'll be able to download that. You will never miss an episode of Healing Stigma. You will find my entertainment show, Left of Straight, on there. You'll find our newest show, Standing on My Soapbox, on there. So please be sure to do that. And always follow the conversation on Twitter at Heal Stigma Radio. And you can follow us on Facebook at Healing Stigma Radio. And of course, the website. If you haven't seen our fantastic new website. How nice is that website, Kevin?
Yeah, please go check it out, folks. It's really fun, and so thankful to all the folks who put in so much hard work on the social media and design side. They are just absolutely outstanding. We're really lucky.
www.healingstigma.com. Next week is going to be a great show. We have so much going on in the news, and we have an out African-American comic, Samson. Just amazing.
Yeah.
His comedy is great.
Yeah.
It's like, I hate to say he checks so many boxes, but he checks so many boxes on what's happening in the world right now that he's going to be fascinating to talk to. I'm just so looking forward to hearing his worldview on everything, plus just having a fun time with him. It's going to be a great show.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And again, in the meantime, folks, you know, start a conversation. Listen to someone else. Open up your mind because that's the beginning of healing stigma, and you can do it. Don't get down. Don't let you know, hope go out of your sails. It's not worth it. We got a good I would say amount of work to do, but we can do it.
Very well said, my friend. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure getting to speak with you for an hour or so here, Kevin. Please join us again next Thursday. Always at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time, just an hour or so out of your time. We really appreciate you joining us. Listen to us next week with Samson. Thanks so much, and we are out of here. You've listened to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, and Kevin and I really enjoy it. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.